Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corndale Church and Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're asking the question, should Christians support #NeverTrump?
We've already been having this conversation for 50 minutes because we're so nervous about putting anything on record related to this whole question. I'm not sure that any of us know exactly what we think. This political season has been chaotic, to say the least.
Yeah. Here's I'm just going to put all my cards on the table.
Ooh, right away.
Right away. I'm not beating around
Come
the
on.
Bush. I am sympathetic to the Never Trump hashtag as much as I'm sympathetic to hashtags. Now, I'm just going to throw this caveat. I am not speaking with any sort of pastoral authority. This is just me.
Oh, so this is not the official view of First City Church?
This is not the official view of First City Church.
Well, that's obvious. But I guess you have to say that officially.
Yes.
Yeah, just in case you get sued by some
somebody trying to say that I'm...
Sign this form on your way out of the studio.
So I am sympathetic to this. I have some significant issues with Trump, not the least of which is I'm not convinced he's even a conservative. So those are just political views. And then on top of that, some of the demagoguery of... That sometimes, okay, I'll be honest. Some of the stuff he says, I think it's hilarious, and I like the politically incorrect stuff, but his consistent appeal to our lower nature, I think just adds to the fact that on top of his policies not being, I'm still kind of waiting to see what is conservative about his policies. So those are the reasons why I'm sympathetic to that. But at the same time, I understand why some would vote for him based on the fact that the alternative could be worse. I don't know how it would be worse. And Bob, maybe you can help enlighten me on that.
Yeah, buddy.
But I understand that. And I see why of the two, I mean, Hillary Clinton seems to be kind of like the kryptonite to anybody who is conservative. That maybe the worst possible scenario. So I understand that piece of it, but
could I even say to anybody who is a Christian or
anybody
saying too much?
I mean, yeah,
perhaps that's going too far. But
I would say this though: if you are going to give me a reason to vote for Trump, sell me on policy. Don't try to minimize his character, because that's just not going to work. I mean, what the dude was on WWE. I mean, enough said. I mean, he was a reality TV star. There's just no way you're going to sell me on his character. So you're going to have to sell me on his policy. So that's how I'm putting my cards on the table. That's where I am.
I like that. I like you starting out that way, Hemmelman.
That was fiery.
I'm going to say I do not think Christians need to support #NeverTrump, which is just another way of saying Christians are free to support Donald Trump. Which might be provocative for
me
to
say. Sign this paper on the way out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm also not speaking of Abercrombie Church or any of its affiliates or entities. Here's the deal. Do I think he's a freak show? Yeah. I mean, you know, like, the guy's not a serious politician or any kind of a morally conscious person. So, like, I don't think any of us are saying, like, gosh, this guy's the model character that we'd like to see.
But he does great things, and people say he does great things.
Listen,
so
he's going to make America great.
He's high energy.
Everything's great. So the challenge for Christians is, if Jesus is our model and we're looking for somebody who's Christ-like or some semblance of Christ-likeness in the leaders that we idealize, then you look at Trump and go, well, there's none of that in him. And so I understand how Christians are like, man, I don't know that I could even hold my nose and vote for a person like that. My concern is that a choice not to vote is in itself a vote. And I do think I have no idea what Trump's policies are going to be. I think the guy could be a complete train wreck in office. There's no telling what he will do. I feel the same way about Barack Obama. I feel like what Obama actually did in office versus what he said on the campaign trail is like Jekyll and Hyde. So I don't think it's possible for us to get to a worse place than we have gotten with 8 years of Barack Obama as our president. It's at least on social issues. In my personal opinion, our nation is quite worse off for the last 8 years. And so I'm just saying, policy-wise, I have a choice of continuing that legacy with Hillary Clinton or trying to go a new direction, which might be more of a train wreck, but that's to be seen. And I'm just saying, there's something to me that just likes to, let's see what that to be seen
no,
is.
That's, yeah. 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 It does make for good TV.
Meaning we can't lose at this point. So
It's a lose-lose.
Already been a loss. So. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I will say this. Ben Sasse is a personal friend, and he's big into the Never Trump thing and has said publicly, man, I will go third party. If I saw a viable alternative in that direction, I would be compelled by that, whether that's Sasse or somebody else. I wonder if that actually will materialize because it's pretty late in the election season already. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, there's some Christians I've seen on Twitter saying, like, Christians have a moral obligation to not vote for Donald Trump. I'm not sure I can get there. I just think I can see this sort of pragmatic side of, hey, if I got to hold my nose and vote for this guy in order to not get the alternative, I understand that. And I think that's a fair principled position.
Can you help lay out, Bob, what's the moral obligation to not vote for Hillary?
Oh, I mean, I'll do my best. Perhaps certain people will disagree with me here, and that will be fun. You can email Mike with all your comments. Mike@cdomaha.com.
I think the moral. I think social issues right now matter more than they ever have. I think the issue of gay marriage. I think the issue of the whole transgender sexual revolution, and I think the issue of abortion should be the most important issues for any Christian. You can disagree with me, but I think you're wrong. I know there's Christians who lean Democratic, and they lean that way generally because of social justice issues and a feeling like, well, this is the direction we need to be heading. And in the body of Christ, great. The gospel is primary. Everything else is secondary. We're free to disagree on those things. I do think that I have a hard time seeing how a Christian can, in good conscience, continue to want to see those things go forward. That's not to say that Trump will stop those things. He may advance them just as much or more than Hillary. But I just think, Mike, if I'm making a statement about why I think there's a moral obligation not to support Hillary, it's because of those social issues. It's because – and I think Christians and politics has gotten to be thorny territory, because here's what happened. In the 80s, the sort of evangelical wing of Christianity aligned pretty closely with the Republican Party and sort of was very, very political. Mm-hmm. Then in the late 90s, early 2000s, you sort of had a reaction against that, because that was our parents' generation, and we saw sort of like the weird places that got the church too connected to politics. Yes. So I think there was sort of this reaction that was sort of in the emergent church era that was like, let's all read Jim Wallace books and read Ron Sider, Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, and vote Democratic. And you're like, it was sort of like the reaction against Christianity aligning to, or evangelical Christianity aligning too closely with sort of the Republican Party. I think the reaction was just aligning it with the Democratic Party. I feel like now where most honest Christians are is I don't think either party aligns with the gospel.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to sort of take a distant stance and say we're not putting our trust in either the Republican Party or the Democrat Party to get anything done that's going to move the agenda forward in our nation in terms of revival or righteousness. But that doesn't mean that issues in those parties don't line up more or less with Christian convictions. So I would just say, like, do not hear me saying it's more Christian to be a Republican than a Democrat. I don't actually think that. I think Jesus would be neither party. But I do think we have to ask questions like, when we stand before Jesus and we're held accountable for sort of our impact on our nation, how is the blood of 55 million unborn babies count in Jesus' eyes versus, you know, whether or not we adjusted the marginal tax rate to benefit people, you know, in better ways? There just is a moral difference there to me.
For the Christian, then, why isn't it better that we just not vote and we don't get involved in politics and we just pray and work towards revival? Because that's really what's going to get the job done. Why don't we just focus our efforts on that?
And look, there's a strong Anabaptist tradition in that vein, and I respect those folks and I learn a lot from them. And I might, you know, again, I'm speaking as a person, not as a pastor. And so there's some sense in which I feel sort of groundless in some of these things sometimes. But I think that living in a democratic republic, I think there's a moral obligation for us to vote and to recognize that not voting is a vote. You know, so that's my thing, is like, for people that are like, well, I'm going to not vote out of conscience. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, well, as long as you realize that's still a vote, and it's likely a vote for one of the two major party candidates, because, you know, that those, unfortunately, until we get a really good, viable third or fourth party, which I really hope we do. I'd love to see somebody start that. I'll be the first person to sign up. Let's do it.
So you're going to run for third party?
No.
Oh,
but I will sign up.
Oh, okay.
I'll join it.
Oh, okay.
I'll join it. You know,
you heard it here first, Pete.
You heard it here, coming to you live on the Wednesday Conversation.
Bob Thune. Hashtag Bob Thune 2016.
The bus is out front.
Yeah. So I think that there's a Christian responsibility to vote because we are the only people or some of the only people in history to have that choice, right? I think about Christians who lived under the reign of Bloody Mary or William the Conqueror or any, you know, Napoleon or Hitler. I mean, they just didn't have the freedom to write, participate in the process. And so to me, that does mean something. And I think American Christians haven't thought very carefully about the political implications of what does freedom mean for us and what does it mean to steward that wisely? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Chris disagrees.
Yeah, I think, Mike, my answer to your question is you can't just go climb under a rock and hope that it all goes away because you're a citizen here and you have a responsibility to that. And you can't just be negligent and just hope it all fades. It's obviously not fading, so...
Yeah, and there's layers upon layers of complexity and somewhat in this. And so kind of, Mike, to your question, too, how do Christians think through who to vote for in a situation potentially like this where you have two candidates that, at least from my perspective, don't offer on social issues, you know, a dime's worth of difference.
Yeah.
Like we're looking at two, yeah. two,
a misogynist or a feminist,
yeah.
which are both equally damaging.
Yeah. I have heard yeah. nothing come from Donald Trump that gives me the impression that he is conservative on social issues.
Okay.
Now the, where it seems like there might be some conservatism in him in is maybe in some economics. And then he's kind of got this very extreme view of immigration, which is a conservative position, immigration reform and limitations on that. So those areas seem to be what are resonating with people. But what's interesting about our country is that we're no longer a socially conservative country. I mean, the socially conservative, those issues like abortion, there does seem to be some interesting traction coming around to where people's views on abortion are shifting. But the ship has sailed when it comes to the issue of homosexual marriage, and even it seems on transgender things. And so mm-hmm. I just wonder, as a culture, Is what we're talking about, Bob, a culturally conservative candidate viable anymore? Are they going to run on those platforms anymore? Or has it completely shifted to carving out maybe some freedom for those that hold religious views and then economic issues? And so it's not so much the candidate that says, I agree with you on abortion or I agree with you on homosexual marriage, but I disagree with you, but I'm going to fight for your right to have your freedom in that. And then economically, I'm going to be conservative. So I don't know. It just seems like even the conversation is we have to rethink how we thought about voting for a candidate in like we did in the 80s or 90s.
How does a Christian not just vote for the next 4 years, but vote for the next 25 years?
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting question because as Christians, the main thing we have to remember is our hope is not in whoever gets in office, or even in politics changing the course, the trajectory of the nation. I think probably what we're in for, regardless of who wins, is more marginalization, more persecution, more of our views being out of vogue and a harder time in the culture. And that's okay. We have to be ready for that, and we have to recognize that's what Jesus invites us into. And Jesus is on the throne in heaven, regardless of who's in the White House, right? So there's a sense in which that needs to be sort of our paradigm, is to say, Christians are not people who hope in the political process. But to your point, Mike, there is a question of like, what legacy am I leaving my grandkids? You know, I'm thinking about that as a voter. And so I really feel like this is part of why I'd like to see a viable third party or fourth party or, you know, splinter movement that actually isn't just anger and fire, but that is principle and yeah. conviction, because I think that gives Christians something to start hoping toward, perhaps. Mm. And I just really see that cynicism corrupts everything. And I think that Christians in general are cynical of politics. And I understand that because I'm that way myself. But I think that we can't allow cynicism to just sort of say, well, who the heck cares? Let's just, you know, because the moment that I want to do that because I was alive in the 80s and because I saw like, well, that didn't, you know, doing all the political stuff in the 80s didn't get any traction for the gospel. In fact, no. It probably hurt the gospel. And so that I don't want to go there again. But I do think that the question of, is there a principled third or fourth party that could in social issues and moral issues that could have a robust conservative vision. I'd be interested in that. And that's part of my answer to your question is I understand that. I guess I would say it this way. I think perhaps a vote for Trump this year is a vote to blow up the system, which is really interesting to me in 30 years. You know, like if the system blows up, if the Republican Party blows up, if gridlock happens, if, you know, whatever blows the system up in my mind might be really a good thing for the sake of the future.
That's an interesting comment.
Because Hillary Clinton ain't blowing the system up. She is as establishment a candidate as you're going to find. And so you're, you know, that's more of the same. Bernie Sanders might blow the system up. Donald Trump might blow the system up. Yeah. Cruz and Hillary aren't blowing the system up, you know.
And I wonder, too, if the thinking through long term is your question, Mike, is so for those of us that these socially conservative issues still matter. And as a culture, we're drifting further and further from those to where are those even viable political options anymore? Is we may be looking at a situation where for the next however many generations, that just as a nation, that's not where we are anymore. And it might be one of these situations where the destruction that that puts through a culture that of a socially conservative, strong leader doesn't emerge in, you know, 25, 50 years from now when there's been all of this kind of cultural degradation. And so someone's going to come along and say, look what's happened, and we need to shift and change things. So I don't know, maybe in our lifetime, we don't have that kind of candidate, and it's our kids or grandkids. I don't know. Just thinking out loud on that one.
Yeah, I do. I want to mention one more thing, and that is to caution against what I see in a lot of Christians, which is that the gospel is something completely separate from politics. And so it's possible, like, let's just be faithful to the gospel and ignore what happens in politics. The gospel is political. It's not partisan. But the proclamation Jesus is Lord is a political statement.
Yes.
And it was first made in a world that believed Caesar is Lord, right? And so it was understood to be a proclamation that had direct implications on the Roman Empire. And I think we have to envision our life as American Christians as the same thing, that we're not free to say, well, we'll just preach the gospel and let what happens happen in politics. We might, for reasons of conscience and conviction, take different approaches to how we engage politics, but we do need to understand that the gospel doesn't let us sit back and sort of be hands off. It calls us to some kind of action. That action might vary. You know, if you've read Dietrich Bonhoeffer's biography, that action in his lifetime meant active resistance to Hitler, and in fact, the attempt to assassinate Hitler that he was personally involved in out of Christian conviction. So it can look interesting ways, but I think what's interesting about that story is that it didn't look for him like, well, I'll just sort of preach the gospel and get thrown in jail and not worry about what happens to Hitler. There was very much an aggressive movement in Germany to say the gospel calls us to an active sort of opposition. And so I think, you know, the Christian who writes most intriguingly on this is Doug Wilson, because I think he rightly gets the connection that the gospel is political. And so he has particular understandings of how he envisions that working out in our nation's future. But I think whether or not you agree with his political sort of inclinations, his understanding of the gospel is right on, in the sense that, like, it has political implications for us.
Which is why you can't go hide under a rock and not vote.
Not that any of us are going to do that.
Right.
Could it be, too, that in some ways, for us as Christians, where our impact is going to be most felt is local and state? I don't know. This is another thing that I've thought of what, I don't know. It just seems to be, I mean, we can vote and we still want those who share our convictions on the national scene and hope to change that. But another thought in my mind that's been kind of, as I've been processing this, is what if our energy is placed locally, so state and local level, and that's how really the grassroots and the change and our pushback, because we have a little bit more say and influence on those levels, and so it's a both and. I know it's a both and I don't want to minimize that, but I don't know. There just seems to be in some ways on the national level, the ship seems to have sailed for the moment on some of these issues, and so to put a lot of energy and focus there seems to be futile strategically, to where maybe strategically we need to focus locally. I don't know.
Well, and you're kind of, I mean, in a way, you're sort of encapsulating the Benedict Option idea, which is, hey, let's stop trying to influence where things are going. Let's just try to be faithful. Let's try to create faithful enclaves where we can pass on a Christian moral vision to the next generation and stop worrying about political activism because the ship has sailed. And because, you know, sort of let's let the thing crash and then from the wreckage have a chance to build something new. Yeah. And I don't think that's a bad idea. As you were asking that question, Chris, the challenge in my head was like, but even the state and local apparatuses are all connected to the Republican or Democratic Party. Yeah. So it's really hard to even be locally active apart from sort of those apparatuses or apparati. I don't know what the correct plural is. So, but I do think it's important for Christians to step in. And this is what I see in Ben Sass, which is encouraging to me, is this guy's a Christian, homeschool dad, member of a gospel coalition church. One ran for a statewide office and is now stepping into a space and articulating meaningfully some conservative Christian convictions in a way that are refreshing, you know, and that don't sound partisan. They sound sort of, they sound appropriately conservative founders, you know, back to sort of the principles that our country was founded on. And that's refreshing to me. I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's the wave of the future or not, but I think that's an example of meaningful Christian activism, is to say, okay, let's be careful not to too closely align with any party, but instead to articulate a compelling vision that hopefully can begin to filter out there. And this is, I think there's room here for the church just to have a voice. Like, think about having a vote is important, but having a voice is also important. And so I'm thankful for Russell Moore and his work. He's getting more and more of a national voice. I'm thankful for Ben. I'm thankful for just Christians that are trying to have a meaningful voice into these things, because I do think that's part of our calling right now as the church, is to say, okay, who should I vote for? It might be an interesting question, or how should I vote, or should I vote, or shouldn't I vote? But more importantly, how does the church speak meaningfully on issues of national and local politics? How do Christians speak meaningfully on those things? Those are important questions.
So at the end of this, if you want to vote for Donald Trump and you're a Christian, it's okay.
Wait, you're saying it's
be
okay
released.
Now? I said it was okay.
No, I'm just saying. Be, I mean, I have some I have some pretty significant issues.
Where
and
you go?
And I think you're wrong. But between you and the Lord, between you and me, if I ever meet you, you know, I have never actually met a Donald Trump supporter.
That's because you
have.
That's because in Christian world, it's not safe to say that you are one.
I'm just saying. Well,
you actually have. You've met many of them.
If you are at First City Church and you support Donald Trump and you don't want to tell me because you're afraid of how I respond, just know I will not judge you. Be released.
You will in your head. You just won't say it.
But I would probably ask you why that is.
But if I'm a Hillary supporter, you're fine with that. If you're a Hillary supporter, come put your sign in my yard, right?
Hey, it is important to say this in closing. We wanted to have this conversation because so many people have asked us, are you guys going to talk about politics? One of the reasons that's a very dangerous thing to do is this, that we do want to embrace that the gospel is what's primary. Mm-hmm. Faith in Christ is primary. These things are secondary. Secondary does not mean unimportant, nor does secondary mean we don't need to think meaningfully about them. It just means they're secondary. And so if you're listening to this podcast and anything we've said doesn't square with your own political views, know that that's okay. And okay in the sense that the primary thing that unites us together is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so we want to create a space where we can have meaningful even disagreements and debates about political things, and where people don't feel threatened by, like, well, I guess I can't vote for this candidate because you guys, you know, didn't agree with that. That's not necessarily the case. It's important for there to be space where there can be points and counterpoints, agreements and disagreements, and where we can process these things in community. And I would want to make the case, too, that there are thoughtful ways to engage this and there are thoughtless ways to engage this. And so my main desire is, let's be thoughtful Christians who have reasoned carefully through convictions about politics, who even have done primary source reading in things like, what is the Constitution? What does it say? Mm-hmm. What is the Bill of Rights and how does it establish religious liberty? Those kinds of issues are important. And so if you're a person that has a little less sort of background in that, I hope you'll take that as a spur to say, no, I need to become more informed so I can more thoughtfully engage in conversations about politics in ways that rightly keep it secondary. And I hope that in this
podcast conversation, we've even demonstrated the ability to have some convictions and keep them secondary and say they're not who you vote for in this election or whether you vote in this election is not as important as your faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and your union with him in his body.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We invite you to join the conversation by tweeting us at @QuorumDeoOmaha.
#NeverTrump.
And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.